I actually think the responsibility is more broad than just digital wellbeing. I think we've talked about this a bit, but we're in this world now where the tools and technology that we're creating will be used in ways that we can't actually yet anticipate or imagine. And if we don't start to think ahead of how these tools might be used or how they might affect society and humanity, you know, it can be potentially very dangerous. So I think everyone, however big or small, has a responsibility to think about the way that their technology is going to be used and how it's going to affect people, and to make sure you put in place checks and measures and balances to try and counteract, wherever possible, the harm, the potential harmful impacts of that technology.
Welcome to episode 107 of the Digital Mindfulness Podcast. I'm your host, Lawrence Ampofo. Joining me today is Georgie Powell. She's the CEO and founder of Phone Life Balance, who are the creators of the mobile app Space. Their mission is to help people find their phone life balance. And in this episode, we're going to be talking a lot about the importance of phone life balance and what that is exactly, the state of digital wellness around the world, and how making people more aware of digital wellness more generally can help to positively impact the lives of billions of people around the world. But before we begin, welcome to Digital Mindfulness, where we bring you the best teachers and thought leaders from around the world discussing how time well spent digitized experiences can help to improve human society and the world at large. If you're new to our show, then the best place to find out much more about us and what we do is to visit digitalmindfulness.net/start, where you'll find a collection of some required listening shows where we discuss everything from digital wellness to persuasive technologies, behavior design, and much, much more. So enjoy this show with Georgie Powell. Hi, Georgie. Thanks so much for being on the show with us today. It's a real pleasure to have you here, and I'm really thrilled to learn more about you and what you're doing at Space. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really excited. It's good to be here.
So let's start, if you would, Georgie, by telling us a little bit about yourself and particularly how Space evolved from being an idea to what it is right now.
Yeah, sure. So my career's always been in media and telecommunications and technology. I started life as a management consultant, and then I moved to Google, where I worked for 5 years running YouTube's content business in Australia. So throughout my career, I guess I've been thinking about technology and the future of technology and how it affects people. And then around 2014, I guess similar to a lot of your other guests, Lawrence, I started to notice my own habits and how perhaps the way I was using my phone or thinking about my phone wasn't making me feel great. And I was particularly starting to get frustrated when I couldn't have proper conversations with people anymore because they were so distracted. And yet they also demanded that I was reachable all the time. And I just felt and continue to feel like it's just the wrong type of relationship. But then I guess despite these observations, my real wake-up moment was when I was a new mum and I was breastfeeding Emily, and I was looking at photos of her on my phone and I was just thinking, this is madness, you know, she's literally right here and I'm missing this moment right now because I'm looking at my phone. And I just didn't want that to be my life. So I started to look at some of the solutions that already existed, and I came across Breakfree. And Breakfree was one of the original phone monitoring apps that was created. I think they launched right back in 2012, actually. And we worked together to overhaul Breakfree and to relaunch it as Space in 2017.
So tell us a little bit more about Breakfree. What was that exactly and what did it do?
Yeah, so Breakfree was a phone monitoring app. So initially it was on Android, and then a bit later they also launched it on iOS, that just measured how much time you're using on your phone, spending on your phone rather, and how many unlocks, and it would give you a little addiction rating. They had this little cute guy called Sato that would tell you kind of basically how addicted you were to your phone, which is, it was really fun, but it was quite a confusing UI. It didn't look, it wasn't as clean for users as it could have been. So we knew that there was work that we could do to kind of improve the functionality and also to make an improved user experience for our users. So that's what we did.
I think, Georgie, through the many guests that we've had here on the show, the point at which people really decide to do something about their behavior with their digital devices or the digital services that they use, it really comes at a big inflection point in their lives. And it really relates also to people that are very time poor. So you being in management consulting, for example, other people who have experienced the births of children, etc., really start to become aware of their behaviours and particularly towards technology in these big moments.
Yeah, and I think that happened for me definitely with having Emily, but also I also realised that how we use our phones really affects people in different ways. Like, I had a huge amount of social anxiety that was tied up with being a new mum and being on my phone all the time and social media and how that was making me feel. Whereas my hubby can spend hours and hours on his phone, but he doesn't have those same kind of emotional responses to it. Mm. And so that, I think I was also becoming more aware of myself and how I was feeling generally, and that related to my kind of how I was feeling about my phone.
I think that's fascinating, and we're definitely going to come back to this. But after working with Break Free, you subsequently developed Space. So tell us a little bit more about Space and why that's so important and how it improved on Break Free.
Yeah. So, Space is a tool that is designed to help people think more consciously about their relationship with their phone. And our mission is to help millions of people to find their phone life balance, whatever that means to them. And so what we do is we use behavior change theory to help people understand their current habits and then to try and create new ones. So that starts by understanding how you're currently using your phone. So we have a tracking tool. You can set goals. You get rewards if you hit those goals. We have tools like notification blocking and screen dimming to kind of keep you on track. We have a function where you can share your progress with your friends and family as well. So we've realized that lots of people actually want to change their habits together and start the conversation as kind of a small community. So we enable that. And then we also nudge users with interruptions to try and keep them on track. So we sort of say things like, oh, hi, you're here again. didn't expect to see you so soon. You're back again. To try and kind of curb some of those cheeky little habits that we've all developed over time. And so I said, so the second part of your question, I think, was sort of why is it important? I think it's important just because we are a tool that's helping people to change their habits. But I also think it's important because we're one of a whole selection of different companies that are contributing to a conversation around humans and their relationship with technology. And, you know, we think technology is fantastic, but we just have to be really conscious about how we use it. And so that's why I also think it's really important. At the moment, there's no single objective truth about the impact that smartphones are having on our lives. And it's so multidisciplinary. You know, there's the safety element, there's a physical impact, there's a psychological impact, there's a social, it's so wide ranging. And at the same time, there's also all these fantastic positive things that smartphones bring. And my feeling is that actually we won't get to a point of single truth about smartphones until smartphones are actually redundant. It's going to take so long to kind of really wrap our hands around this stuff. And so all we can really do is talk here and now about what's happening around us and observe what's happening around us and try and make changes to collectively as a society. And having this conversation is really important.
So, Georgie, I really want to explore this idea of phone life balance. And in particular, you were saying that there's no objective single point of truth about what phone life balance actually is. And it's absolutely, and you're absolutely right. But if Space really helps people to find their phone life balance, whatever that means to them, I'm wondering how you help people to find that point in the first place. Because if people have never had or experienced phone life balance for themselves, how can they possibly know where that balance is for them?
Yeah, so I think the way we think about it, phone life balance comes when you're being conscious about how you're using technology. And to be conscious, you need to understand what your relationship with it is like right now. And what one of the things we do with our product is we have a quiz that gets people to start thinking about why they go to their phone, what's driving them, and also how in the future they want to feel about their phone. Mm. And that's based on this idea that actually habits and addictions are formed in response to an emotional need. So for some people, their phone is meeting this need of kind of being socially connected. For others, it's it's sort of the ego effect that comes from feeling like they're having a huge impact at work. For others, it's because they actually feel uncomfortable being with themselves or having that moment of boredom. And we want people to kind of realize when you go to pick up your phone, what's actually driving you at that point in time. And when you understand what's driving you, then it's easier to change those habits and then to find kind of true phone life balance.
So in the time that you've been working with Break Free, that you've developed Space, but also for us in the time that we've been on air and been researching digital mindfulness more generally, the big technology companies now have declared intentions to develop more digital well-being tools, a whole suite of them that really compete directly with what you're doing at Space. So I'm really interested to know what your thoughts on this are, whether these are positive and what the future holds for Space.
You know, as the deliverers of the technology, they have a responsibility to think about how it's being used. So It's really good that they've launched these products. As profit-making entities, they also have a responsibility to respond to shareholders. And when the Apple shareholders back in January, I think it was, sort of called out that kids were addicted to smartphones and this was a major problem, it's kind of inevitable that Apple was then going to respond. I also think, in light of the pressure that they're facing in other areas around data ownership, competition, tax, the ethics of technology more broadly, doing something around digital wellness is actually a really nice positive story to own. And it's relatively easy to deliver on. So it's kind of a nice step forward for them in a landscape which is otherwise becoming increasingly challenging. And for us, I mean, when I first heard the news, I had to go for a very, very long walk. But it is good in that it brings the conversation to the forefront. And no longer do I have to convince people that digital wellness is important, because Apple, Google and Facebook are saying it for us. So
do you think it's then the responsibility of these platforms to create solutions for our digital well-being, or do you think that this rather lies more broadly with the developer community?
So I actually think the responsibility is more broad than just digital well-being. I think, and we've talked about this a bit, but we're in this world now where the tools and technology that we're creating will be used in ways that we can't actually yet anticipate or imagine. And if we don't start to think ahead of how these tools might be used or how they might affect society and humanity, you know, it can be potentially very dangerous. So I think everyone, however big or small, has a responsibility to think about the way that their technology is going to be used and how it's going to affect people, and to make sure you put in place checks and measures and balances to try and counteract wherever possible the potential harmful impacts of that technology.
So one of the things that you mentioned previously that I really love to pick up on is the idea that the technology landscape for these big platforms is becoming increasingly challenging from a digital well-being perspective. What did you mean by that exactly? And are these tools a response to that challenge?
Yeah, you just had to look in the press, you know, everything they're facing around competition and tax and data management. So,
there's shareholder activism as well.
And yeah, exactly. And so there's sort of this tide of sentiment is starting to shift, and with that kind of changes user sentiment too. So I actually think in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see huge disruption in the structure of the tech landscape. And I actually think that will probably come around models around data and data ownership. And sort of on the topic of data and data management, there's lots of different potential models the way it could go. None of them are very simple. But you're sort of starting to see that grow again, a little bit around the same as with digital wellness. You're starting to see this growing wave of user sentiment around how is my data owned and used, and do I have an ongoing right to that data, the value of that data.
So given those points that you've just made, do you think that the objective of these companies really is to encourage people to use their devices or services less?
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? I mean, there's a natural, and sort of the top line, there's a natural conflict, because for Facebook and Google, their model is built on advertising, which requires volume, and for Apple, it's content, which requires volume. So there is, of course, an inherent conflict. However, there is definitely the case to say that less engagement that is deeper and more meaningful is actually more valuable. So there's a business case argument for that. And also, if you think about the incumbents of the past, and I think about these guys as incumbents, they think about sort of fixed line telecoms operators or oil and gas companies. It's always been the case that these businesses have been forced to evolve into other businesses that potentially, quote unquote, eat their lunch, whether that's investing in sustainable energy solutions or the case of fixed telecoms, like launching mobile solutions or then launching content solutions. And it's really just the same. The question will be, how far are they prepared to actually go to invest in kind of real solutions to help solve digital wellness questions, real solutions to help solve digital wellness questions versus just providing kind of top line some pretty stats for users to look at.
So thinking about the digital wellness landscape more generally, what would you say then that you're most excited about with the different developments, the different startups that are starting to emerge in this space?
Well, I feel like I'm just scratching the surface, actually. I mean, the wave has obviously come a bit faster because Google and Apple have made these announcements. But the reality is, I still think this is a conversation that's really kind of still limited to the Valley. And there's a few of us here in London. And I think people are starting to talk about it at home. But there are still millions and millions of people that are coming online for the first time every day around the world. And digital wellness is not something that's going to be top of their agenda. So it's something that's an important theme topic that is still got room to grow and to affect more and more people. And I think how it evolved is very new as well as an argument and an area of conversation. So I think the way that we talk about it and this conversation I was talking about earlier is going to continue to evolve. That's really interesting. I also think what's really interesting is as technology becomes more pervasive, and it's everywhere. You know, I talked earlier about how it won't be long before smartphone technology is redundant. I really believe that. I keep thinking more and more just how weird it is that I walk around the house with this thing in my hand, which is clunky and hot, and it runs out of battery, and I drop it, and it buzzes at me, and it's sort of this weird extension of my physical being, but it doesn't really work. That it won't be long before that problem is solved, and technology will, you know, be fully in our homes and in our cars and probably in our bodies. And that'll be great because it'll remove a lot of the physical boundaries associated with technology, but it will bring with it new challenges about how we consciously disconnect or consciously connect when we need to and when we don't need to. And I think that's a really important and exciting future horizon for digital wellness. The other thing that I'm really interested in, and this is a challenge that I kind of wrestle with myself as a product developer in this area, is how digital health apps more generally, so not just digital wellness, but also, you know, Fitbit and meditation apps and diet apps and anything else that kind of helps us to be better humans, the role that we all play in this environment too. So at Space, I'm really conscious about creating a product that genuinely improves people's lives without contributing to the distractions which take away from people's lives. And one of my concerns is that as digital health more broadly, not just digital wellness, continues to grow, how we ensure that we're making products that genuinely enhance humans rather than just providing an excuse, I guess, to interfere with people's lives more frequently.
So as a product owner, I think, Georgie, this is really the challenge for you, because one of the things that you're judged on is not just the number of users that you have with Space, but also the extent to which they're engaged. So how long they're actually using the app for. So I'm wondering, how do you square that circle?
But actually more than that, and I'm less concerned about that. What I'm more concerned about is, are we actually able to help people change their habits? And in order to do that, you need them to be sticky in your product for a while and for the product to work. But stickiness requires a certain amount of content or products and services, but not too much, right? So it's just always finding this right balance between a really clear MVP versus getting rid of all the extra stuff you don't really need. So it's a constant challenge for us.
I just want to talk a little bit about awareness more generally of digital wellness, and particularly, as you mentioned previously, that there are going to be, or there are, millions of new users that are using the internet for the first time around the world. And that number is very much a constant as we connect the billions of people that aren't yet connected. But I'm wondering why in your opinion, the discussion of digital wellness is really just extends to people in the Valley, or as you mentioned, small pockets in London, in Berlin, Dublin, etc. Why isn't this discussion more widespread, do you think?
I think it comes back to this thing that I said earlier about how there is no objective truth about the impact of smartphones on our lives. So when, for instance, there was that the huge change around smoking, it was really easy because you have a list of physical impacts on your body and you have these images of your lungs that you can look at, and you can add together exactly how much it costs to be a smoker per month. And you can weigh that up against, how smoking might aid you socially, or how it makes you feel, or how it makes you relax. And okay, yes, it's still very difficult to change habits over time, but in a way it's still easier because you have an objective truth. You can kind of really quickly, easily look at the evidence. We don't have that set of evidence. And because the positives are so networked through our lives, and actually in most cases the positives are directly linked to the negatives. So for instance, phones allow us to stay in touch with our family, but on the flip side, it means that we're contactable all the time. It's a really kind of messy conundrum that we have. And that's, I think that's the biggest challenge for when people take a smartphone. They're looking always for what it enables them to do rather than thinking about what it might take away from them as well.
So you said, Georgie, that one of the main objectives for you is to directly improve people's quality of time as they spend on their digital devices. So I'm wondering if there's anything you can share about the ways space has directly helped improve people's lives.
Yeah, sure. So it's really lovely. This happens a few times, actually. We've had universities that have reached out to us that have been using space in studies, independent studies, and a number of them have basically shown that people using space are able to shift not only their sentiment towards smartphones, but it has wider implications across their lives. So, for instance, one study showed that using space significantly reduced the amount of time that people spent on their phones, but it also improved their sense of productivity and time management among students as well. So I can't remember, one of your previous guests was touching on this fact that what we're finding is people that use space actually become more mindful in other elements of their lives as well. So because you can become more conscious of a lot of your behaviours, because so many of your behaviours are actually linked to your phone. So that's really positive. And then we're also just seeing, that just from the data that we're collecting every day, like sort of millions of days worth of data every month, that people who use space actually spend less time on their phone than the national average. And that's by quite a lot. So in the US, it's by about an hour and a half less than the average US phone user. And of course, there's an element of selection in that anyway, because people who are using our product want to be using their phone less, but we see it as something really positive.
So what's your plan then, Georgie, to have space help even more people in the future?
Yeah, so the focus, we've kind of got a number of things going on, but the most important thing right now is making sure the product evolves in a way, as I say, that is meaningful and useful without being just another source of distraction. But what we are trying to do is to add more content and insights into the product so that people have more ammunition and more evidence behind them to help change their habits. So for instance, one of the simplest facts that's helped me change my habits is I have, was looking at some of the research around distraction and understood that actually even just seeing your phone on your desk, even if it's screened down, has a significant impact on your IQ. That's really helped me to keep my phone away from my desk so that I can now focus fully on the task in hand. So we want to give our users stats like that they can then use, or tips. The other thing I do, for instance, is I now only look at my phone when I have enough time to fully respond to the messages that could be there waiting for me. Just getting something really simple. But if people have more of these kind of tools or evidence and information, then hopefully that can help them to also change their habits. So that's the first thing we're doing. I want to think more about this rest of the world problem. And as more and more people are coming online and actually technology enables them, significantly improves their quality of life in so many ways. How do we also deal with digital mindfulness in those kind of environments? And then we're also starting to think more about this sort of the cross-platform solution. And as technology becomes more pervasive, how can space help people remain consciously connected when they are truly connected in a sort of unbeknownst way all the time?
So the point you made about space being a cross-platform solution. I think that's really interesting because it does dovetail with what you were saying about extending away from the app economy and taking the idea of digital wellness outside of the smartphone environment, and that it actually touches all of our digital interactions.
Exactly. And I don't know what that ultimate product will look like yet, but we have to change, right? Because one of the ways I look at the future is, I think as technology is all around us, then there'll be less of the scrolling issue that we have now, you know, that kind of takes us down those rabbit holes and we lose all that time. Mm-hmm. Because we won't necessarily be so screen fixed. But instead what will happen is we'll have more interruptions that are coming at us at exactly the right period of time, day, prompting us to do things. And touching back on this digital health issue that I was talking about before, I'd expect a lot of them will be around how to improve your life. So, you know, take your medicine now, get up and move now, start your work now, da, da, da. And then there might be clusters of messages that also come to us at particular times of day that we programmed. And that's all great because all that technology is supposedly going to help us be better humans, but it all comes at the cost of distraction and interruption at times when actually maybe we're having a really in-depth conversation with our grandma, or when we need to have a deep and meaningful moment with our child, or when we just need to have some time to do something that we don't even know what we need to do. We just need to be bored or to daydream or to have the idle moment, which we talked about earlier as being so important. So that's what I want to be really conscious of, and that's how I think space can help us all to be conscious of when those interruptions are coming at us, what we really need and what we really don't need.
So what would you say then are the most important human qualities in this age where we are hyper-connected, and how do we cultivate those qualities?
I love this question. I think the most important thing is listening, and I think the reason is that sometimes the way that we're using technology at the moment is breaking our ability to listen properly. And that's partly because the way that social media works, it kind of dilutes conversations down to sort of short snippets rather than to detailed, deep conversations. But it's also because it's breaking our ability to concentrate, and we easily get distracted, and we don't actually have the same kind of level of conversation face to face. But if we actually really took the time to listen to how people were feeling, and what people really thought about the future of the world and what they cared about, then I think that would help a lot with a lot of things that are going on, you know, across society and humanity. People have great, great ideas and great thoughts, and I don't think we're making enough time to really take the time to really understand them and to really listen to them.
I think you're absolutely right. But in everyone else's defense, it's incredibly difficult to know exactly what to listen to. So we have so much information that comes at us every second of the day. And we don't just have to talk about social media here, but again, in the case of social media, we're being asked constantly, what are you thinking right now? What do you want to share right now? With email, depending on what your etiquette is with the person you're responding to, that response is required, if not immediately, then certainly within the next few minutes. So I think in addition to us not really knowing where to place our attention in terms of what to listen to, I think there's also a lot of time constraints that we're not really encouraged to deeply listen to what's going on around us. We're really encouraged to respond or to react. And there's a really big difference between the two.
Yeah, but I think that's why digital wellness is so important, right? Because it's giving us a set of tools or beliefs to give us the confidence to say, hang on a minute, like, just stop the noise and let me take the time to think about, out of all of this, what I really care about, what I really want to listen to, or what I really want to think about and develop more in my mind. And that's why digital wellness sort of starts to reach further beyond everything else we've talked about today into, you know.
I think that's an incredibly important point that you've just made, because if digital wellness then has the potential to make that much of an impact on the ways that people live their lives every single day, then the conversations that we're currently having within the digital wellness community or the products that we're developing, we haven't really scratched the surface in terms of what they can potentially achieve and the impact that they can have on people?
I think that at the heart of this is my concern that technology is moving so fast, and we know that with every single technology release, the rate of uptake is so much faster, right? You've all seen the charts, like how long it took radio to go out, how long it took TV, how long it took internet, how long it took smartphone, blah, blah, blah. So we know it accelerates, but we haven't yet caught up as a society with how it's currently affecting us, and yet the next stage will soon be upon us. And so that's why I think everything we do around digital wellness is really important, because it's stopping us to really think about our relationship with technology now, kind of before the next wave is on us, and it's really too late to sort of salvage those parts of humanity that we think are really important for the ongoing development of civilization.
That's fantastic. Georgie, where can people find out more about you, about what you're doing at Space, and connect with you?
You can find out more about Space at www.findyourphonelifebalance.com. And you can contact me anytime at georgie@space-app.com.
Brilliant. Well, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show today, Georgie, and learning much more about not just the digital wellness landscape, but also what you're doing at Space. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much, Lawrence. Thank you.